Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. We're doing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. 1989 was ground zero for the Ninja Turtles. That was their year.
And you could tell because the Transformers franchise collapsed.
Transformers never had that toy. You had to, like, strap your Ninja Turtle under a toilet that had slime flushed down the toilet. That actually happened. Look it up.
I remember a few years ago, they were selling in stores, like, the original molds for the Ninja Turtle toys. And I was like, I gotta get all of these. I'm gonna relive. And then, and like, at a certain point, I'm like, wait a second. I'm not gonna use this. Like, this is garbage.
You mind if I kind of bring focus back to the game real quick?
If you have to.
Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
For some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge and lay maintain with a course aimed at colleges. To HG 101, we give the honor. Thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as to Tanga, Cal, and Bobinator, Booker Hart, and others. Discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and if they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. And add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power.
Hey, what are you suggesting?
Hey, everybody. Da-da-da-da. Welcome back. That doesn't make sense anymore. So, hey, everybody. Welcome back. So today we're going to be talking about Final Fantasy V, which was nominated for us by At Lurking Wind.
That would be me.
Yep, that's right. So guess who likes this game?
Not me. I hate it.
Yeah, it was developed by
500.
It was developed by Square.
Done.
That was a quick one, guys.
developed by Squaresoft. Published by Squaresoft. The world is square. Mm-hmm. For the Super Nintendo, earliest release date in territory is in Japan. So that means we know the exact date. It was December 6th. 1992 in Japan. Who's with me to talk about Final Fantasy V?
Slow Beef. Right on the Wind.
And I'm the Great Clade.
Hey, yeah, we should have introduced ourselves with, like, the crystal titles.
That's a little too nerdy even for
no,
us.
That's ridiculous.
I'm Compassion.
I don't know. I don't even know what they are. All right. Yeah, so anyway,
I've played the.
I'm legitimately not sure what part of Final Fantasy V that is. But okay, doesn't matter. I don't care. I want to talk about Final Fantasy V.
Okay, so. So let's start talking about Final Fantasy V by talking about the first time and method we used to play it. Like, when was your first exposure to Final Fantasy V? Starting with, we'll go chronologically.
Up or down?
who here experienced it first on as a ROM hack, like a translated ROM? Me too.
I didn't finish it though, but I did.
Didn't finish it, but did play that.
Yeah,
fill in later.
So, who's down with butts?
Me!
Yeah!
That is a legit German name. And all the characters have German names. It's legit.
Oh, nobody cares if it's legit or not. What people care about...
What matters is Butts from the Town of Licks is a stand-up kind of guy.
Butts from the Town of Licks.
But do people, like, at home, do they get that, you think? Do they know this joke? Or
so,
this whatever?
No, we're going to have to explain it.
So, yeah, like, his official name is, like, somewhere in a nebulous area between Butts and Barts. Official medias in Japan keep flip-flopping on it, but it seems to lean towards Butts.
Well,
when we got the PlayStation version on Final Fantasy Anthologies, the really bad localization went with Barts and a lot of things that were just damn wrong, so that's a little suspect.
So what would
the GBA
actually,
continued Barts.
What would he,
so,
what is the literal pronunciation of the
Batsu.
Yeah. Batsu.
Yeah, do you know how like in Berserk it's Gatsu and it gets like kind of translated as Guts is his name? It's
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it's like a lot of ah sounds when you're doing like attempts at foreign languages from Japan, that usually tends to mean something that we would interpret as, in English, a U noise.
You know,
Bansu.
I almost kind of like Batsu. In a different game, Batsu would be a decent hero name.
I mean, it doesn't matter, because I always renamed the main character Xerxes. That's where...
I always name him Butts.
That's from now on, I think I'm going to switch to Butts. With
So anyway, I started with Anthology to finish that trade.
You poor thing.
The first official release in North America, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
I got it on Anthology, but I didn't play it.
Well, I was
not
like,
played Anthology, and boy howdy, I'm glad I didn't.
8 when Anthology came out, so I hadn't even heard of the magic of the internet and ROMs yet, so.
I would appreciate if you never mentioned that fact ever, ever again.
Sure. Let me tell you about how when I was 6, I bought Final Fantasy VIII.
There is a time too, and I think I might mention this, where it would be unthinkable that there would be a Final Fantasy game, especially a Super Nintendo one that I hadn't played. So I was super excited to play the ROM hack, etc. I didn't get through it. I had Anthology. I didn't really get through it, and then there was a GBA release next, right?
That's
the next
one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are the 3 official releases of FF5 until the mobile port happened, which subsequently got released.
But I should feel it. I think it's worth mentioning too. There's an annual charity event we can talk about later, I'm sure, which got me to play the GBA version.
Yeah, that's a very important point to an argument I have.
Yeah.
Anyhow,
I see where you're going with this.
So the crazy thing is, as you may have understood, like if you don't know this, you might have to turn in your retro gamer card at the door, because this is one of the things that like it used to be like there's 2 things that you knew that distinguished you as a nerd. For old games. The first thing was that, did you know the Japanese Super Mario Brothers 2 was actually the Lost Levels, and our Super Mario Brothers 2 was Doki Doki Panic, something, something, something. And the other thing you would know is that our Final Fantasy 3 is actually Final Fantasy 6, and there's 3 games we didn't get. Nobody be typing while we're doing this. If you're going to type, you got to mute.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Let's keep that in.
No, I'll hope to. I probably will end up doing it by accident, but it's not supposed to.
That's right. This will remind you.
Yeah.
Hi, future Xerxes.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Don't expose my ignorance, okay? Just don't draw attention to it.
Just getting some revenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there were a bunch of final. Yeah. So the North American releases of Final Fantasy 1, 2, and 3 were actually Final Fantasies 1, 4, and 6, I think.
Yes.
And yeah. Because there were a couple that were just never released here, like the NES 2 and 3, which I understand it are kind of like, yeah, not so great.
Well, they also came out like
the NES
2
was actually translated officially.
Yeah.
they didn't release it. Yeah.
Yeah. But, and then, yeah, 5 was skipped over, so we never really saw it until later, kind of in the releases we were talking about.
Yeah.
And you can kind of see why, I think.
Granted, I
liked it, but still. You
know. Yeah, I like this game a lot, I think it was like basically what they ended up doing is they created a new Final Fantasy game to sell to North America, which people make fun of, but I think it was the right choice. So,
the weird thing about this Final Fantasy is, well, I guess back in its it was kind of like in the wrong time as far as North America is concerned, because story-wise, it's quote-unquote not very good compared to the others. And like, there's like I mean, there's like arguments to be had for how good Final Fantasy is in retrospect, you know?
Right.
Because I know, like, the sort of hipster take is Final Fantasy VII sucks and VI is terrible too and all this stuff. But back in the day, these were like games you considered like really good and interesting stories with like character
right,
arcs
yeah.
and twists. And again, in a world with like a dearth of that sort of thing, Final Fantasy V is a little almost more like somebody described to me like a Saturday morning cartoon type of story where it's like the villain's kind of silly, like things aren't super serious. There are character deaths and arcs, but not super. You know,
right. It's not like super detailed. It's a very light and breezy kind of story that doesn't really try to really hit up on the "you should feel bad starting now" quota that like 4 really likes to ham up and 6 also goes on.
I think the reason why it does have that problem is because of the versatility of the game. So it's the second Final Fantasy game with a job system, unless you count the original.
Yeah, that's not
kind of a job system, but it doesn't really. Job system being like a thing where there's character classes, but you can switch and are supposed to switch constantly.
Okay, because I'm having a lot of fun with this. Beef and Xerxes, and I think were when you guys originally played the original Final Fantasy, did you guys know about the class changes?
You mean like fighter?
Considering that I never played Final Fantasy 1 to completion until last year.
Oh, okay.
So do you mean like? Or... Do you mean yeah? I know what you mean. I think where well, fighter like, can become a knight and then become a ninja.
Like when I was replaying it, I kind of noticed the game didn't actually draw a whole lot of attention to it in a sense.
Well, like the way your sprites like get super buff.
No, I mean like the fact that you knew it exists.
Yeah,
I mean I did because of Nintendo Power. I think.
Okay. Like yeah. That.
I think most people did because if you played Final Fantasy, it's probably because you had the Nintendo Power. Like.
Okay.
They didn't. It wasn't like Dragon Warrior where they sent it out to everybody because they had a bunch of them.
Yeah.
It was like.
I'm just wondering because backwards, you know, it's really hyped up. It's like, oh, it's the Final, top system.
I'm gonna
Final Fantasy. I think that might have been their first like official player's guide like thing where they just sent them out to all subscribers to Nintendo Power, whether you had the game or not.
I have a theory about Final Fantasy V, which I think helps describe the job system and how it fits into the other series, and it's totally unsubstantiated.
Go for it.
Sounds good.
Okay. So, Final Fantasy V solves a problem that 4 and 6 had, which is how do you have like, sort of an epic story with pathos and possible character deaths and characters leaving and entering the party due to story beats, but also have like an RPG with like strategy elements to it when you can't control classes that are entering and leaving your party because they're usually tied to a particular character. Right. Hence this new job system.
Really narrow. It's not new.
Right. So I almost have a theory Final Fantasy V is a bit experimental in the sense of like, let's back away from the story. We're going to have 4 characters. They're going to be freelancers, we'll call them, and they can take pretty much any job in the game. We'll get into that in a second. But that way we have like a light sort of story to kind of see how this goes. And I didn't really use it in 6, so I don't know how well they thought it went. But whatever. That's my theory.
It is worth pointing out that 3 is indeed the first game where you could actually switch between distinct classes as opposed to promoting a class, which is what 1 did.
The difference is that 3, the original version of 3, didn't like the characters weren't distinct from each other. There was
no,
like,
they're just onion kids.
They started out, they're onion kids on an adventure. They fall into a cave for some reason and gain magic powers and all that.
And kill a genie.
With Final Fantasy V, we're not going to go into the story super in depth, but we do need to talk about there are distinct characters. They gain different jobs, but they retain the same relationships to one another. So you start out as Butts or Batsu or Barts or whatever. There's no good. Just name them whatever you want.
Yeah, but you've got Butts. You've got a princess named Lena. You have an old guy named Gallif, and you have a pirate named Ferris. They're all great in their own ways.
They're pretty cool. What's cool is they also give them, like, so they don't have classes the way that Final Fantasy IV characters did, right? There's no, like, Paladin and Dark Knight and Dragoon.
They've got backstories, but they don't have, like,
right.
given associations with a given profession. Like, you know, what's Butts? He's a hobo.
Butts is an adventurer. He has a pet Chocobo who stays with him, I think, for most of the game, right? Like,
no. He leaves fairly early comes back later.
Yeah, you lose access to Boko fairly early on.
But I mean, like, it's not like it's the
Boko
still
never
there.
Goes away. It just becomes inaccessible.
Right. Gallif is like the old man character. And then Ferris is the pirate character. And I mean, we got to spoil this, right? Like,
yeah, that's it, really.
The pirate has a sea dragon, like a sea monster that is her best friend, and she's also a woman, which you don't know at the beginning. You assume that she's a man, as do the characters in the game, and you can't tell by looking at the sprite, because until you change classes and therefore change sprites, you can't tell, like, the sex of the character, right? So,
well,
like...
Yeah.
Well, Lena's pretty femme, but that's consistent with her.
Right, but Ferris has a
very androgynous wardrobe between the classes.
In the beginning, yeah. I mean, it's sort of still there in the classes, but she's very clearly... Like, you can look at it, and it's interesting, because this had the Amano artwork, right, for it.
Yeah, so everyone looks kind of femme.
Yeah, well, I didn't mean it that way, but...
Everyone looks really wiry and underfed and kind of pale.
Kind of pale, needs some sunlight.
You see
yeah.
the like later Final Fantasy Amano art? It's great.
It's like Edward Scissorhands made a game all about
yes!
every character being Edward Scissorhands, but they don't have scissors for hands. And there's no Vincent Price. So yeah, unless you count Gallif, I guess. But it's interesting because the way that the game unfolds is like the characters actually do matter. Their relationships to each other do matter.
Mm-hmm.
There are two characters who are siblings, and they find out like early on, but not immediately. And there's
forget about that. Huh.
And they're among my favorite characters.
Which
is hard for me to say because I like all of the characters in the party.
And there's a character who dies and is replaced by a different character, and which is terrifying when it first happens to you because you think, oh my god, I lost all my jobs.
So, like, I was going to wait on this one, but if we're going to like touch on that, we may as well just go straight into spoiler territory. Feel free to skip ahead.
I don't know.
I think it is worth mentioning that replacement character automatically gets the character that they're replacing's like jobs and levels and everything, and not for they sort of like lampshade it, I think is the term, you know, with like here's how that happened, but like it is a thing where it's like no, don't worry. And again, the reason I had kind of mentioned earlier is it's sandwiched between two Final Fantasy games where you lose characters pretty quickly or they come back, but you never have any control exactly of what your party is comprised of class-wise.
Exactly.
And this kind of frees you of that and says, like, we'll do character stuff kind of like that, much, much less degree, really. I think we've...
It's nothing compared to, like, it's weird because it comes after Final Fantasy IV, which has, like, characters just die and never come back.
Well, except they don't.
So I was thinking on that. See, the plot... I mean, melodrama aside... both games are really kind of set piece heavy scenario wise.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, hey, we got to go into the magnet cave. And oh, hey, we got to go in the floating castle in the sky. And oh, hey, we got to do this thing. And oh, hey, we got to do that thing. And I think, like I said, Little Melodrama and Final Fantasy IV isn't quite as melodramatic as you remember.
The only thing I really want to say about the story, besides what we've said, is that the main bad guy is named X-Death, which I think is my favorite main bad guy name.
It is.
Any
X-Death is my favorite Final Fantasy villain.
X-Death. Yeah. Go ahead.
And
because he thoroughly enjoys what the hell he's doing.
Okay, Beef, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, but, like, to get, like, to sort of the level of it, it's like, at one point, he becomes a splinter that enters a character's foot so that he can walk into some sacred cave and then transform out.
You finish.
Final Fantasy V, I just mean, is like, I don't think 4 or 6 ever get that silly.
No.
You know what I mean?
No. Oh, and
silly when it happens, and I don't know how silly I would qualify it, but I can see why someone would see that as
well. If you say it that way,
he also finds a big turtle. Like it's not a serious game. I don't know.
No,
where,
it's
like,
not.
You know, like,
not super serious.
And quite frankly, that's like one of the best jokes in the GBA version because the turtle drops a line about what you think I was doing, eating pizza, and it's like, oh, cute Ninja Turtle joke, and then it's like, wait a minute, hold on, what was he hiding as? A splinter?
Hmm.
Mind that's, blown, but not really.
Let's,
so,
yeah. Sorry, Beef, you were going to say something else?
No, I wasn't. I'm done speaking.
Okay, so let's rank. No, I'm just kidding. It's got a job system and all that. And it's got a secondary bad guy named Gilgamesh, which I remember loving.
Gilgamesh is everyone's fan favorite. So fan favorite that Gilgamesh decided to show up in just about every succeeding game after this one.
Gotta be great. Gilgamesh. Yeah. So, but the main thing about the game is that in addition to that stuff, and it does manage to be somewhat, you know, affecting to the player, the way that the certain characters die and have relationships to each other and have a history that they're kind of gradually pieced together and you love your Chocobo and all that. Like, who wouldn't? Yeah. Do you want to say Chocobo and you want to, like, you might as well just leave right now because it's Chocobo. Damn it.
There's a a song.
It's a Joyzy thing.
Go ahead and be wrong. It is your prerogative.
Ride that chocobo. They say it.
They do. That's right.
Sorry. So, what
do you call it? But it's wrong.
Yeah. I don't think...
So let's talk about the levels.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
So the neat thing, or what kind of how the job system, both Final Fantasy 3 and 5 work, is so the dungeons in this game are fairly maze-like in a sense. Although this one does tend to get a lot more room by room compared to Final Fantasy 4.
This one isn't really mazy all that much. There's like maybe two mazes and everything else is fairly straightforward.
Well, yeah, that's what I was kind of getting at, was it was room to room to room. There's a couple. I know like right early on, the ghost ship. And see, once again, going back
the
to scenarios.
Ships, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool area. Beef, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, like, I think it's worth mentioning, like, yeah, the dungeons are definitely a lot more manageable. They're a lot more fun and interesting.
A lot of them are short.
Well, hold on. But the reason I say that is because the game has about 50 or so bosses.
I was going to hit that.
Yeah.
That's where this game both shines and gives me a little bit of problems. Because with the job system, and always where Final Fantasy's had weird times with the job system, is this game is kind of puzzle bossy, where it's like, all right, you got to figure out my gimmick and set up your job system to fix
not
that.
Really?
That's not that bad.
No.
I disagree.
That's wrong.
It's not a Final Fantasy game if you can't muddle your way through with no clue of what you're supposed to be doing.
Nah. I was going to finish up with, this game solves the problem of Final Fantasy III, where it was really hard on that and gets a lot better about it, but it still points you, like you'll fight the big fire boss after the end of the big fire dungeon.
Where else are you going to put the fire boss? You going to put the fire boss at the end of the library? No.
Anyway. No.
It wasn't it?
No, that's where you use the fire summon.
What was I going to say? Well, I think the thing is that you have to understand that I'm going to say this is possibly mechanically the most interesting and maybe even the best of the first 10 Final Fantasy games.
Absolutely.
Without a doubt, though.
Absolutely.
I don't even think that's a close call. I'll explain why. Seriously, Final Fantasy 1, 4, and 6, which are the big ones, right? The big ones before in that era. Your answer to how do I get past the gameplay challenges? I'll go as far as I can. I can't get any farther. I'll grind a bit. That's it. This is or I'll go back and buy armor, which means I grind a bit.
Mm-hmm.
5 is like, no. We want you to use classes. We want you to explore all the abilities you have and get job points and like learn stuff. And then like you can retain some of the shit you learn from one job when you use it to another, make kind of cool combos. Like it's pretty deep, actually.
Any job system game that doesn't let you do that is not like a job system JRPG. Like you've got to be able to combine skills or else there's no point to doing it. But the problem is what's always baked into that is that you've broken the game almost by definition. Because
I would not agree with that. Like if we look at, you know, how we have a lot of various set piece bosses, it is entirely valid to just brute force your way through several of them. The number of Berserker only runs that have been made at this point prove this.
I'm not saying it's impossible. I've just, like I said, the game really pushes you to just go. It's not as bad as Final Fantasy III, where you have to be that one boss with all Dragoons or something like that. But
well, the big thing with 3's job system versus 5's is that 3 limits you on switching your classes. Like, in the original NES version, you have, like, points that you need to spend to actually switch a job. Don't have points, you can't switch, so you gotta go grind it out. In the remake of it on DS, they make it so that, like, you have, like, a cooldown period
for
your stats. In 5, it's just, you switch. Oh, you went from, like, knight to black mage? Congratulations. Here's all the black magic that you know, and, you know, whatever your equipment is. You're good to go. It doesn't cost you anything. If you reach a situation where you're like, okay, my loadout here is not adequate for the challenge I'm facing, there's no penalty. You don't even need to grind. You just need to rethink your strategy. That's it.
Now, everybody, hear me out here, because I have a suggestion. Like, the way I would fix a job system JRPG, like, I do not, I understand, I really like them. I like the idea of it. My problem with it is usually that there's a point towards, like, close to the end of the game where all your characters have mastered so many classes that, like, there's really no challenge left.
Does that happen here?
Xdeath can be mean.
Xdeath is a bastard.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only reason I'm arguing is because I'm not sure about the thesis when you say, like, we got to fix. Is that like?
Because I haven't finished talking yet. Yeah, like, so, like, the main.
Oh, excuse me, pal. Let's hear the big fucking mic drop then.
Well, it's not. I don't know whether I want to now. Maybe I just have to just let you guys deal with it.
Xerxes drew attention to himself. Xerxes experiences regret.
Oh, no, not that part. I regret nothing, my friends. No, what I was going to say is, like, that I think is, in my opinion, like, is a problem with this game and also other games I really love, which I love this game. And I really love, you know, a lot of the Dragon Quest games that have job systems too, but there's an issue. Like, I always feel like towards the end of the game, I feel like my characters have mastered too many things. And if there was like a better way, like there's gotta be some way of limiting the amount of stuff you can know.
So here's the thing, like, having played through this game, you know, several times now, and, you know, at one point I played through the game like 3 times in a week. Usually I have mastered 4 jobs by about the 3/4 mark. So at end game, you're probably looking at like 6 jobs mastered per character, depending on how you're doing that. That there are over 25 jobs in the game.
Yeah, my characters usually
like it is nowhere near all of it. It's like, if you want to get all of it, you can get all of it, but realistically, you don't need all of it
because there's like 6 or 7 best jobs.
Not really.
Wait, okay, all right.
I mean, like, dual wielding X item, double magic. You wreck shit.
Well, one of the ways that a lot of job system JRPGs try to deal with is that they have like a tiered job system where it's like, you can't do this particular job until you've mastered these 3 jobs, right?
Which a great game did.
That's a horrible thing. That's a freaking slog. Oh, you can't use this class you actually want to use until you go through these other crappy ones first.
Well, I mean, the main reason why that exists is in part just like to make it so you don't, you know, like you have to spend more time to get those super powerful skills, but also it's because that the otherwise, like, the there's not a lot of differentiation because most battle systems for these JRPGs aren't diverse enough. They don't have as many different things you can do in them to justify 25, 26 different character classes. I think what Final Fantasy V does is that, like, the good thing is this is not super duper long, like a modern day Dragon Quest game, where you just keep playing and playing and playing, and you'll naturally, your characters are just going to learn like a billion classes. And which I don't mind. I'm just saying, like, with Final Fantasy V, I feel like it's just long enough that you're challenged by the end of it, you know?
Yeah. And on the subject of gating, you know, off the classes and whatnot, like, rather than, you know, doing the route of you have to grind in these classes enough for this character to do this other class, instead, 5 gates things by plot, and you usually have most things by the end of about the 1/3 mark, but there are still things that can only be acquired later, and those are like the things that would like blow the game wide open, like job.
And it, because it's a Final Fantasy game, it's all via crystals. Beef, what did you want to say?
I didn't want to say anything.
Okay, so let's rank it. All right, so you're going to have a chance to dump all over this game, Clay. Just give me a second.
Well, that's fine.
We're in the ranking section.
I'm not going to dump it.
Are we at the ranking section for real?
I don't feel like we're at the ranking section. I got plenty to talk about.
Oh, no.
How much more can we say?
So, first off, I want to point out like what I feel is the mastery of the design of this game. Beef mentioned the 4-job fiesta, which is a 2-part subject that I want to go over. And the first part of it is that it encourages you to play through the games in the way that you wouldn't usually do so. The way it generally works is a bot assigns you classes, and you have to run through the game using only those classes. Like, you can mix and match them among your characters, and, like, there's variant rules, but the gist of it is you use these 4, that's it. And it's possible to go through the game with any of those classes, and in the event that, oh, hey,
I don't get this one until later. The freelancer-based job is still entirely valid on its own, even in the early game, because there's a lot of equipment that is available for later job classes that you can use with the freelancer before those classes are available, and they do have validity against given bosses. Like the whip that causes paralysis, you can use that against the boss of the water tower, and it's susceptible to paralyze.
Yeah, I think what's nice about Forge of Fiesta 2 is that, like, you do get to, just a quick aside, but, like, you do get to MacGyver sort of solutions out of, like, because a boss will say, like, you know, early on, you'll need a healer. That's, like, a good, and it's a good design. It's, like, you're not forced to have a healer, but it really helps on this boss, and, you know, that does blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, see, what I was kind of hitting at. That it works. I just wanted to, because everyone jumped over me when I said it, so, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. My point is, I think what's cool about it, too, it really does expose how they kind of, I mean, that's where I kind of balked a bit when you said puzzle bosses, because I feel like it was more maybe Square wanted bosses that encouraged you to use the fleshed out, like, job system. Like, they didn't want you to just get one or two really strong jobs and stick with them. They wanted to get you out of your comfort zone with that, and I think that's kind of like...
Okay, well, that's what I'm getting at. Yeah. I read it as, make sure you have one character as this class that can do this thing. And if you bring four of them, I'm screwed. And that's just kind of how I breeze through the game.
I mean, the first Fiesta I had, it gave me, like, the first thing I got was White Mage. And I had to, like, dinky stick my way through, but I could...
Oh, yeah. And no, I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm just saying, like, I never enjoyed the four-job Fiesta because my favorite part of JRPGs especially is just breaking job systems, so...
Okay, can we quickly describe for our listeners what the four-job Fiesta is?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and that goes into my second point. Four-job Fiesta is an annual charity event focused expressly around FF5 and playing through the game under limitations. And, you know, it's encouraged to, stream your progress or what have you. And people can make donations to, oh, hey, watching this was entertaining. Or, you know, it's like, hey, let's make this harder and switch up one of the jobs for what this person is playing. You know, that's a donation. So there's, like, various incentives to donate to this charity that contributes to providing entertainment for hospitalized children.
Who puts on this event?
Pretty much one guy. It's a Revenant Kyoko, I think his name is.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's Revenant Kyoko. Revenent Kyoku. He has a Patreon as well.
What time of the year does it happen?
It's basically like in the summer. It's like, yeah. It starts at like August, I think.
Yeah. So it's like after summer games done quick.
Yeah, and it's like it's pretty much run by a Twitter bot. And the idea is in the game, you get a crystal, and the crystal will give you a subset of jobs, and that happens four times in the game, more or less, you know, where more and more jobs open up. So the idea is it'll say to you, like, your first job is, and it'll give you, there's different rule sets, right?
It's like, the wind crystal gives you knight, and then the water crystal gives you time mage, and then the fire crystal gives you ninja.
Yeah, and you're only allowed to use the jobs that the tweet bot sends you, which caps it four, as opposed to the 25 in the game. So that's where, like, I got stuck on my very first run of it because I had no healers. So I'm like, okay, I guess. And the potions in the game don't heal a lot, which I think is by design, again.
I think so, too.
Yeah, that they want you to use healers. They want you to do that stuff. So the idea is then it's like, well, how the hell do I come up with this? And it's funny because you go with your friends and you're kind of like, and you'll have, like, the one friend who knows everything about Final Fantasy V. And, like my friend, like Raving Loon, and like, okay, what we do here. And, like, one boss I had to use Bard, and I had to hide every time he was doing an attack, come back and hit him once and jump back. And
that's,
like,
how I took out Shinryu.
We can take out one of the super bosses by casting zombie on yourself and just like reflect on the zombie and then just let everyone else die and just let him, like, hit himself over and over, and it takes like an hour.
Oh man.
Like, there's all kinds of goofy combinations that you can come up with to defeat bosses, and the Fiesta really outlines, you know, just how many approaches to the varying bosses there are. Because contrary to, like, 80% of the RPGs out there, bosses are not just flat immune to status ailments just because they're bosses. You can blind bosses, you can confuse bosses, you can silence bosses, you can berserk bosses. You know, you can do all kinds of things to actually screw with the boss's momentum you know, mm-hmm. as opposed to being, you know, oh, status effects are a player-only affair.
Right, which is and rare combined for a Final with the Fantasy fact game. That,
yeah.
And combined with the fact that a lot of the bosses are basically of the construction that they don't have gobs and gobs of health, so it's like by the time, you know, you've got a working loop, you have to keep doing it for five more damn minutes, which is something that 4 is extremely guilty of. And at the same time, they also hit really hard, so you're always, you know, in danger. So it becomes, you know, very much like kind of like a rocket tag sort of thing of, you know, this is going to end quickly one way or another. The game does not waste your time. You either succeed or you don't succeed, right. but you're going to have intensity the whole way, regardless of the outcome.
Right. As Beef said, like the weak healing items is probably deliberate because you don't want to have like two white mages or two, you know, healing, you know, classes in your party at the same time. Cause it takes forever to beat any, you know, reasonable, you know, battle.
In the early game, it takes way too long. And then you hit the end game. It's like, oh, hey, I've got holy now.
So you have to really, you know, like think carefully about how you're going to do it. And like, you know, who's going to be like a high defense class and all that. And
I think an interesting point of bringing up the Fiesta, cause I know like somebody's going to come say like, well, that's not part of the game or whatever. But like, the thing is that this is a hard challenge to make into other RPGs. And it's yeah. interesting that Final Fantasy V has this sort of depth to it where you can add that kind of these kinds of restraints or constraints around it and make it like a new metagame kind of where emergent gameplay is that I don't know what
you're and right. and it still you know. Works within like the original design scope of the game without having to like make any alterations. Like they tried to branch off and do it for FF6 and like, oh, it's just like whenever you have the option you have to use these characters, and it's like you're not going to have access to those characters for like 2/3 of the game. What's the right. point?
It's kind of like Nuzlocke Pokemon in the challenge it provides. But that said, it also shows that like that's where I get the notion that Square kind of had some thought behind. I want you to use Knights on this boss. I want you to use Time Mage on this. You know what I mean? And like, I want you to figure this out because later dungeons we're going to load up bosses and they're going to have gimmicks. So you better know how magic works here.
And regarding, you know, like going into the ranking conversation, this is an extremely influential game. Most like RPG designers in Japan say that 5 is like one of their biggest inspirations, especially if it's, you know, like a job class based sort of affair. And like, so among the industry, it's really influential. And then with the inclusion of Fiesta, which subsequently spawns attempts at Fiestas in other games, which started with 5, here's a charity that's contributed over $100,000 to, you know, improving the lives of ill children, and they're still trying to perpetuate that.
Which is like the whole like I know like people are really, and maybe it's not so much nowadays, but like a few years ago it was really popular like diss like the streaming kind of phenomenon where it's like, oh, like we're not even playing games now, we're gonna like watch somebody else play the games. But like there's like a community aspect to this that can be harnessed for good, and this is an example of it. It's just like this is a fun thing to do, and it's like awesome games done quick. It's like it's a fun thing to do. It's like a yearly thing. It's cool. I do want to, we gotta rank it. I was gonna say
25 Earthbound.
Okay, we got to rank it. So I don't know about that, but
I absolutely know about that.
Yeah, so it is, you know, it has some longevity. I feel like it's, you won't really see, if its influence were truly as powerful as we've said, like,
I mean,
there'd be a lot more games where you like get to peek in one of your party members changing clothes and you're weirdly attracted to them and you question your own sexuality.
That's the big innovation.
I've never seen that anywhere.
Okay, so hear me out. All right.
It's like a CD game like that, wasn't there?
No. There's a lot of discussion that goes around regarding
visual novel?
Ferris, because like on like it de- like depending on like what script you're looking at, like either Ferris is a trans man or is, you know, a cross-dressing woman, and regardless of how it shakes out, Ferris gets treated very respectfully by the party.
Right.
They just accept that Ferris is Ferris, and Ferris is basically the biggest badass in the game except for one moment. lot of people argue that Ferris is the actual main character.
That's an interesting point. Like, I didn't really think of it that way. I thought what was interesting about it to me when I first played it on, like, a crappy emulator in the 90s was, like, that's a weird thing to do in a game. Like, that didn't occur to me that that would – like, that was playing kind of with the kind of the ambiguities of the sprite art, right? Like, you communicate to the characters that you code a character as male, and then you, I mean, code like in the contextual sense, right?
Yeah.
Like not like the game development sense, but,
you present,
right. You present a character as male, and then you deal with the fact that like, oh, somebody walks in on this character changing clothes and they like, there's like the little heart thing comes up like, oh, like I'm smitten by their attractiveness, and they don't explain why.
I was sleeping, changing clothes is later is when the actual reveal happens.
That's right So I mean, it's like, it's weird, it's like in the right light, like he's really attractive, like I'm questioning, like am I into dudes, like it's not
like that happens with Butts and Gelf, they're just like Ferris is beautiful, like I don't
it's like in the right. Yeah, it's like it's and you know, there's a whole thing where like Ferris is a pirate and she's the leader of the pirates, right? And the pirates all accept Ferris as their leader, and you just kind of assume Ferris is male, but the pirates don't say anything about it, right?
Like going into Ferris's backstory, you know, they found Ferris when Ferris was basically a toddler. They have to know.
Yeah, they right, exactly. So. Like, they don't say anything about it, but, okay.
They fully accept Ferris for being, you know, the colossal badass they are.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, I mean, I think in the modern context, like in the way that we would look at this character now, there's still something to be seen there that, definitely did not occur to me in the 90s. I'll just say that. But at the same time, that was an interesting concept to put into the game, because it's like the two other male characters in the game, like, They think Ferris is a man, and they're like, I think Ferris is kind of hot. Like, <it's, laughs> you know what I mean? Like, at the time, it was a strange thing to see in a game, or in any media, really. Like, that just wasn't a thing that was a part of, you know, other games. That was just a thing. And, like, later on you find out, but it's not like Ferris never, like, changes who Ferris is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
and it's also worth noting that, you know, of the five total party members, you have two definite dudes, two definite ladies, and then, as said, depending on what script you're looking at, Ferris is either a trans man or a cross-dressing woman. Either way, you don't get ratios of, you know, ladies to dudes in a Final Fantasy game like that until you hit 10-2.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And then you get another character later on. Which gets really different.
Yeah, like compared to 6, which has 14 characters and there's only 3 women. It's like, oh, hey, we've got basically the same amount, but we're way more disproportionate.
That's true. I never thought about that. It's very different. Anyway, we got to rank it. We got to do it.
I stand by 25.
Okay, I don't.
I know you don't.
I like this game a lot. It's not the 25th best game out of like 400 something.
Beef, you with me?
I'll go with 25.
Okay, so 25 would put Final Fantasy V above Earthbound, below Super Mario World, as of this recording.
Two SNES RPGs that are vastly influential on the RPG scape in entirely different ways.
Super Mario World, not necessarily an RPG, but yeah.
I think she's talking about Earthbound and Final Fantasy V.
Oh, I see what you mean. Sorry.
you were talking to me earlier about my thoughts on Super Mario World. If we can, like, you know, put 5 there and drop Mario World 100 ranks, I'm fine with that. I'll accept that as scientific.
So Beef agrees then, basically. Like,
I'm willing to put it pretty high. Sure.
Okay, so that's 2. So that means that me and Clade, an unlikely alliance, if ever such a thing could happen.
Well, it's never since Dragon Quest V.
Okay, where would you put it, Clade?
Incidentally, this episode's happening profile. Because of DQ5.
That's true, in a weird way. It's Clade.
Yeah. So, well, at least it has to go below Valkyrie Profile, the greatest RPG of all time.
Where's
that? That's not that much further down, though.
38. mean, it kills me to put it above Final Fantasy VII in a lot of ways, but boy, I don't know if I have the munition for this.
I feel like I gotta put it below Final Fantasy VI, even though I feel like as an RPG it holds up better. But I feel like as a Final Fantasy, it doesn't, and that's kind of like it has to do with my feelings about Final Fantasy as a series.
Like as a game, it unquestionably holds up better. And you know, as I said, how many games out there can claim to have charities based on their core gameplay loops?
Not bad, but that's
like if we're going to talk influence, if we're going to talk influence, like what's more influential than actually improving the lives of people?
Okay, all right, that's a good point. I struggle to do that because like if you could do that with other games, accidentally. That would be really cool, and I think that
it's
would be great.
Nice, but, and it's why I'm not going to argue it too hard. But man, that's a loaded. That Xerxes used the word random, and
so wait, let me throw this out there too, because one of the big conceits of this podcast too is to sort of signal boost games you haven't heard of, and Five is definitely one of those games. I'll grant you the series is well known, but Five is definitely one that got found.
It is.
I think at for this sure. point, that's hard to say.
No, it's true because wasn't like it didn't get. It's not like three where it got like a special DS version and all that. And
I came across Final Fantasy, like Anthologies was heavily marketed as, the return of Final Fantasy V. Or not
it
the,
was marketed?
First. Yeah, bought it when I was 10 or something like that.
Like, I picked up Saga Frontier because I saw an ad for it in the back of a Final Fantasy Tactics manual. I never saw anything for Anthologies.
I have in my hand the coin of science. This is a very, this now is an official coin. This is a 50-cent piece. It is the maximum size of legal tender currently circulating in the U.S. of A. We have to agree on some kind of position.
They don't have...
And then we can flip for it.
They don't have $1 coins going on right now?
Well, they do, but 50... Anyway, like I said, right below Valkyrie Profile.
Okay. All right. Above Asteroids.
Yeah,
Asteroids. Above Asteroids. Okay.
You put it below Asteroids. I'm
so heads. It's heads. It's me and you, Clade. Tails. It's Word and Beef. I'm gonna let it hit the floor and let's hope it doesn't roll under something. It's tails. So it's tails. It's tails. That's where it goes. Where did we say it went?
25.
Below Valkyrie Profile.
No. Go away.
Below at 20, so below Super Mario World.
I'm going to submit $10. Clay, you're now a berserker.
Final Fantasy V. That's where it goes, right under Super Mario World, right above Earthbound. Thanks everybody for sticking with
one
us.
Second.
Hey, kicking a few bucks.
This is already codified, right?
Good. It is. Yep. It's done.
But I want to.
Okay. I don't think it goes that high, really. But
what? I want to say.
that's ridiculous. I mean, it's good, but come on.
Don't say that.
I'm just joking.
This is like the cartoon character who like goes, now I've seen everything, and like puts the revolver in their mouth and pulls the trigger.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at right now.
All right.
That's,
good night, gentlemen.
All right,
good night,
everybody.
Ladies.
Everybody. That's where
and
it goes.
And good night, ladies, and, who dress like gentlemen.
Next time the four job fiesta comes around, kick in a few bucks and make some kids' lives a little bit better. Thanks, everybody. Peace out.
I'll probably be streaming again at that point.
I said peace out again.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter, Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know, I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HD Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.